In this episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast, we talk about the NBAA Business Aviation Convention and Exhibition, including a supersonic business jet in new turboprop engines, also the AC-130 Ghostwriter, used Boeing 777 prices, the TSA, and running an ATC system with old Windows software. We have Ozdesk and Across the Pond segments and tons of listener feedback. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 378 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and I'm joined by several co-hosts. First, we have Brian Coleman, our associate producer. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Max. It's great to be here, and if I sound a little funny today, it's because I just got back from the ear, nose, and throat doctor, and they shot lidocaine up my nose and shoved a camera down it, so wee-hee, I had fun today.
Some people would say you always sound funny, but you know, that was too easy. That was just too easy. Also joining us is our aviation historian, David Vanderhoof. Hi, David.
Hey, this makes 2 weeks in a row. I'm doing good. Like Brian, forgive me, I'm suffering from a cold. So as we said on UAV Digest last week, welcome to the sexy sounds of airplane geeks.
Yeah, David had a procedure that resulted in him not having very much volume, so he had to get very, very close to the mic so he could be heard, and of course that generates that deep voice. Well, it sounds like the walking wounded around here. Also with us is Rob Mark. He's an aviation journalist, publisher of the Jetwine blog. Rob, are you healthy and all set to go?
I'm just perfect as usual, but then having just come from the Business Aviation Convention, I'm perfect as usual, but then I am, after all, a pilot.
Yeah, okay, very good. In fact, we're going to talk about the NBAA conference some with or convention some with Rob, and as well as some of the news stories that came out of that recent week, this past week. So this episode, we're going to spend more time talking about the aviation news stories, and we also have a lot of great feedback from all of you to discuss. We've got that. We've got an Ozdesk segment with news from down under. We've got an Across the Pond segment with some French aviation news and a few other goodies along the way. So with that, we'll get started. Are you guys all ready?
Ready.
Ready.
All right. Well, as Rob mentioned this past week, we had the NBAA convention. Rob, what are your observations from the show? What was the mood? What was the buzz? Give us the sort of the inside skinny.
Well, let's be sure that everybody knows what it is. It's the National Business Aviation Association. And so in Vegas this year, we had about, if I remember correctly, 27,500 folks.
Wow.
Kind of came and went through the floor. I think there were 1,100 exhibitors, and every fancy business aircraft manufacturer you can think of was there. The Gulfstreams, the Bombardiers, of course, the Boeings, the Textron Aviations, Cirrus, Embraer, you name it, and I'm sure I left a few out. But lots and lots of people all interested in what's happening in the private aviation world that is not the essentially just the fun-to-fly folks. These are people using airplanes for business. And I went to the Honeywell puts out a forecast every year that gives the world their particular perspective on where they think the world's headed. This year, they were nice enough to invite me to the dinner. And, of course, I think they got us all plastered before dinner so that when they gave us the numbers, we wouldn't be too shocked. They're a little flat. Nothing terribly, you know, nothing going crazy on the positive side, but not falling off the edge of a cliff either. I think everybody is just kind of happy that there is some growth in the industry. I don't think anybody's expecting 6, 8, 10% like maybe we were seeing before the economy tanked. I think that would probably make people a little nervous anyway. So there were certainly enough people there to make everybody feel like it was a good show, and lots of cool stuff happening. You know, we're going to talk about the supersonic business jet. Textron announced a new airplane. There's all kinds of good stuff that was going on there if you're an aviation geek.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we can start off talking about this this supersonic business jet. This is the Ariane that I think we've talked about in the past. And Flexjet, which is Rob, what would you call them, a membership and charter services company?
Fractional ownership, that you can own a piece of a supersonic business jet. I think I bought one, actually. I've got 3 square inches of the left rear main tire.
That's about
all I can afford.
Right. Flexjet placed a firm order, or announced that they placed a firm order for 20 of these Ariane AS2 supersonic jets. Valuation of that was $2.4 billion. Of course, I guess that's this price. And Flexjet, they plan to use these jets for overseas flights and flights to China. Of course, there's a problem still with flying supersonic aircraft over the United States. You're not allowed to. It's just a flat-out prohibition, isn't it, Rob, to fly supersonic because of the sonic boom problem?
Well, it is interesting that you mentioned that, because there was much talk at Vegas about this. I know a couple of the guys involved in the Ariane group, and they invite – I got invited over there for some snacks and some really dandy birthday cake somebody was having, and they took us in the back there and showed us all the secret plans and the models. And of course, I tried to sneak out with one of the Ariane BBJ models, but it didn't work because it was about 4.5 feet long and I couldn't put it under my coat. So, but anyway.
And someone noticed that? I can't believe that someone noticed.
Well, you know, I tried the same thing I always did with my daughter, which was, oh, look, over there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, while they're looking, you abscond with the – but then I realized that it was still sticking out of my jacket, and that just wasn't going to work. But
Brian, don't you understand that if he stuck it vertically, it was taller than him?
Yeah. That's the other problem.
Oh, dear.
But no, seriously, it was quite an interesting discussion, and we all talked about that you know, the supersonic issue, which is, of course, the secret sauce that they are putting together, Ariane and, of course, now their partner Airbus. And it caused me to go look at the regulation just because I wanted to make sure I understood what it said literally. And it says you cannot fly over the United States supersonic unless there is an unless there. And it's some sort of prior approval, and it has to do with the sound footprint of the boom. And what Ariane is saying is that they believe they can fly their airplane at 1.2, Mach 1.2, and still have a sonic boom that is that they will not have a sonic boom that would go through the speed of sound, and they could still be doing 1.2. How they can do that, I don't know. But as Bob, my contact said, that's the secret sauce. Mm. And
okay, it looks like an F-104. It has the same profile as an F-104. There's no way in hell that airplane is not going to make a sonic boom.
Says David Vanderhoof, the engineer.
Max, you look at that airframe. that airframe is an F-104.
It does have a lot of similarity to that airplane.
Well, I didn't say it wouldn't make a sonic boom. What I said was they believe they can fly at Mach 1.2 and still have a sonic boom that is less than the speed of sound when it reaches the ground. So that's that may be some kind of engineering jabber, but that's kind of the way they're headed.
Rob, what you're saying is they're flying so high by the time the sound waves reach the ground, they're no longer at boom status?
What I'm saying is that they said they think they can fly at Mach 1.2 sonic boom and have a boom that does not exceed the speed of sound when it hits the ground. I don't know any more about it than that, I'm afraid. I really don't. And they honestly didn't explain any more than that.
Yeah, there's a lot that's not really explained yet, I guess. This is a three-engine jet, but we don't know who the engine supplier is. I don't know. Did you hear anything about that at the conference?
I don't know, Max, before you get into the engines, I had an issue with I've determined another problem that they have. They said that they were going to fly from Los Angeles to Narita, or actually they could have said Japan, so maybe this is the loophole. The jet has a range of 4,750 nautical miles. To get to Narita, at least, it's 4,772 miles. At least, by the way, I was taught math, they're 22 nautical miles short.
Yes.
So how are they going to do that?
Brian, maybe you didn't take into account the effects of relativity.
From 75,000 feet, they glide into Narita.
And if there's bad weather?
Well, then they just glide more accurately. No, I don't know what they're going to do with that.
But you know what? If they have a bridge in Brooklyn and they're able to sell it and get 20 firm orders, good for them.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, David, this supersonic business jet is not new. This concept has been around for more than a decade, and Ariane has been at the leading edge of this whole thing. And that kind of went away about, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It just kind of stopped being talked about. And then the conversation started again about a year ago, a little over a year ago. And in the last few months, in fact, in the last month, not only did they pick up this order from Flexjet, but they also picked up a partner, a major aircraft manufacturing partner in Airbus. And everything that I have heard and the people I've talked to said, this time it's going to happen. Now, I don't know. That's just what the word on the street is. But maybe they do have some secret sauce in there that's going to make this all come together.
Now, can I ask about engines?
Sure.
Is that okay, Brian?
Sorry about that.
Well, it sounds like they may be sort of conventional. I mean, there's a quote in here from the Airbus CEO, Doug Nichols, that says that solutions are in sight with today's engine technology. So I don't know if that means off-the-shelf technology or current technology that just needs a little bit of development, but it definitely sounds like they're not talking about some kind of all new engine to power this thing.
But whatever engines they're talking about, it also says that the aircraft with all three engines running will burn roughly 1,000 gallons an hour.
Yeah, it is kind of a fuel pig. But well, the Concorde wasn't a very fuel efficient airplane either. I don't know how it compares. Of course, this is a lot smaller. This is an 8 to 12 passenger, I guess, cabin size. So it's quite a bit smaller. What I've seen is it looks like the thing is 170 feet long, to give you sort of a length description. But as David mentions, the wings are very short and stubby. But I don't know. It's fine. David's a pessimist, I guess, when it comes to what this thing's going to be able to do. We've certainly seen a lot of, interesting ideas come and go, aircraft that never never see the light of day. The fact that Flexjet has put down cash money for 20 of them, down payment anyway, I mean, that suggests that at least the smart folks at NetJet are convinced that this has, got some legs to it.
Well, Flexjet and NetJet are two different companies. We want to keep that straight.
Did I say NetJet?
NetJet.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I meant Flexjet. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's always going to happen. I think there were certainly people that thought that the old Boeing SST was going to come together when the Concorde and Boeing were in competition. What was that, 40 years ago? And it didn't. But again, I think everybody is of the belief that all the work and all the research and all the experience that they gained with the Concorde, good or bad, has just gone to waste over the last decade, and that it's time to take the next step. So, hey, I say let's go see what they can do.
Yeah.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I'd love to fly on it as well. So,
all right. Well, let's move on because there's some other announcements. Well, actually, with respect to engines, we see that GE Aviation announced that Textron Aviation will power the single-engine turboprop, I guess they call that SETP, S-E-T-P, with an all-new GE Aviation 1,300 shaft horsepower turboprop engine. This is territory that's been owned by Pratt & Whitney Canada with the PT6 for a long time, don't you think, Rob?
Oh, yeah. That's a big motor, too. I flew twin-engine turboprops that had 650, 750 horsepower aside, that, you know, weighed in at 13, 14,000 pounds. But you're talking about a single engine airplane that's going to weigh considerably less. And that's a lot of power for one small airplane. Of course, again, they have to build it and get the, engine certified.
Sure. In fact, in that regard, it's reported that GE expects to conduct the detailed design review for this new turboprop in 2017, and they're looking for a first full engine test in 2018. So, again, as always, we see some long lead times when it comes to developing this stuff.
So, Max, with an engine that has such power, are they looking at new airframes to put it on or just increase performance, short field takeoff? I mean, why do it?
Well, why do it? Why do it can be answered in a couple of ways. One is push into a market that, like I say, has been previously kind of dominated by Pratt & Whitney Canada. Maybe GE just got a strategy that says, you know, we can take some technologies that we've got in other engine areas, other engine types and classes, and bring those together into this new turboprop and come up with a competitive product. As for the Textron airplane, I don't know too much about it. Maybe you do, Rob.
No, the single engine SETP. No, I actually don't know much about it. I did not have time to get over to the Textron Aviation booth at the show, so I don't know if they had a mock-up or anything like that there. So I'm afraid I'm a little short on facts on that one.
Now, in fact, Pratt & Whitney Canada did announce the launch of a new PT6 turboprop variant. It's the PT6 140-140A, which is an engine developed for the Cessna Caravan, I guess. But this Dash A version is characterized by 15% more power and 5% better specific fuel consumption than comparable engines in its class, as they say. Pratt's doing some development in the PT6 line as well.
Well, yeah, and 5% improvement in specific fuel. I mean, that's a huge amount. I mean, on some of these, and you'd probably know that better than I am, sure, Max. But I mean, when they get to these monster turbofans that they put on the large airliners, I mean, if they get 1% or maybe 1.5%, that's a big deal, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. An airline is definitely interested in if there's only a 1-2% improvement, that translates into millions of dollars per airplane per year. So it's a big impact.
And there's a lot of airframes out there that take PT6s.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Thousands, I think. Thousands. Textron, let's see. We have this from Flying Magazine. Textron Aviation unveils Hemisphere Jet. Is this a different new jet?
Yes.
So what do we know? This is...
yes,
can I just say all of this Textron, and then I saw the citation, and I went, that just doesn't work.
The Textron citation? No, you're right.
I'm sorry, but that's a Cessna citation, not Textron. But I digress. I'm sorry, Rob. What were you about to say about this?
No, in fact, David, it's funny that you say that because I heard someone mention something at the show about King Airs, and I don't know what model we were talking about. And he said, yeah, you know, that twin-engine turboprop that Cessna makes. And I said, no, that's really not a Cessna King Air. It's a Beechcraft King Air that's owned by Textron that owns Cessna. It's just hard to get that away from people at times, I guess. But anyway, the Hemisphere was announced. It's going to be about the largest of the citations. You guys may remember we had, oh my gosh, how many years ago was this? We had Tom Agnello from, who was then the VP of marketing from Cessna, on. Right. The night after, the same night that they came out of a big announcement about the Columbus, which was going to be Cessna's new big wide body business jet, and then they canceled it. So the Hemisphere, though, is going to be a slightly larger version of the Citation Latitude. I think they believe it'll carry about 12 if they cram them in there right. Do about a 3,500-mile trip, so that would make it pretty well able to cope with starting from one end of the U.S. to the other. But again, the dates are still a bit fluid. I think we're in the 2018 category before we're really going to see anything flying.
How does it compare to the Citation X?
That's an interesting one because I wondered about that myself. It's slower than the Citation. I still call it the Citation 10 myself, but they were going to call it that when they updated the Citation 10. It was going to be called the 10 TEN, and then it went back to being the Roman numeral X, which also means 10. Which I don't know what they call it anymore. All I know is that that's the fastest business jet out there right now at about 925, I believe, and the Gulfstream G650s at 0.92, and the Hemisphere is going to be way slower. It's not designed to compete speed-wise with the 10.
All right. Well, Rob, any other thoughts regarding the NBAA convention before we talk about some other stories?
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, we got to tell you about one fun one.
Okay.
Day before the show started on Monday, the NBAA held the single pilot safety stand down. And, of course, for those military folks, David understands all this military jargon that essentially as a safety issue, flight departments, squadrons will just stop flying in the name of safety when there is an issue that they need to focus in on to try to prevent an accident. And so NBAA held the safety stand down on Monday, and I was very honored to be part of the single pilot working group. A bunch of hard work, six other people beside myself decided we were going to try to make a make an impact on the safety issues that we're seeing in business aviation, personal business aviation.
Hey, Rob, I'm sorry, you're married. How could you possibly be doing single aviation stuff?
I know. And in fact, the number of times that I said I'm a single pilot, they went, oh, so you couldn't find a girl? And I go, no, I just... Anyway, so, hey, look, I didn't name it that. That's just what they called it. You know, what can I tell you? But the safety record actually for people that fly their own airplanes for business is not real good. In fact, it's the one area of business, just general and business aviation, that the statistics are getting uglier. And part of it is that aircraft are much more sophisticated than they used to be. We don't know if it's completely based on training. There are a whole lot of issues that we wondered about. So we decided last January when we met the first time in San Diego that we were going to put a movie together. And so we did. In fact, I wrote the script and I helped direct some of it. And I got to star in the movie. So really? If you go to the link that I think I put in the notes, people can they can watch the video. It runs about 7 or 8 minutes, I think, on the NBAA site. But it was designed to call attention to the fact that just because you're flying in a jet or a single-engine turboprop all by yourself doesn't mean you've got all your, together, that you can still be overwhelmed. Yeah. So you can still, the weather can close in on you. You can make stupid decisions. You can do things that can hurt you and the people you have in the back. And so, again, we were trying to shed a little light on that to get people to rethink how they fly, how they train, that sort of thing. So we had about 125 people in the audience. And actually, they really liked the video. So I would encourage everybody to go take a look and see if what they think of it. And like I said, all the guys that helped on the single pilot working group were from all over the place. And I think we put together a pretty neat project. So people can see that. And they can watch me scare the bejesus out of myself in an Embraer Phenom 300.
All right, great. Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
All right.
All right, some other stories. Consumer Reports conducted a survey. More than 20,000 passengers who took domestic U.S. nonstop flights in the flyers rated the airline they flew on comfort, on carry-on space, things like ease of check-in, in-flight entertainment, fees, all that kind of stuff. And they looked at it for coach and for first class. And for coach, who came up at the top of the list, JetBlue had the highest score for the coach cabin seat comfort and legroom, although its food and refreshments, I guess, didn't fare so well. Some of the other ratings, JetBlue, Southwest, and Virgin America, they got favorable ratings for check-in, staff service, upfront disclosure about their fees. Southwest and Virgin America rated for being poorly cramped and uncomfortable in coach. But for first-class service, Virgin America stood out top of the heap with Hawaiian Airlines and Alaska Airlines. They scored well, a little bit below Virgin America. Of course, who got the lowest rating for coach carrier in the survey? Everybody all together now?
Spirit!
Yeah.
And I really thought Rob was going to say United.
No.
I knew better than that.
So, interesting survey. Put a link to that article in the show notes.
But, can I just ask a question? Where did you say Southwest came in? Southwest was in the cramped cabin category?
Yeah, they were rated poorly for a cramped and uncomfortable coach seats.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting because you know what? Maybe I've just gotten used to it, but to me, a cabin is comfy if I can sit in a chair and cross my legs and not have the guy in front of me kill my knees. To me, that's okay. But again, maybe I'm not expecting.
No, that's a lot of room. I think that's a lot of room. I'm comfortable if the people sitting on either side of me aren't touching me.
Yeah, I think part of the thing with Southwest, they probably got dinged because they don't have an expanded economy section, called Economy Plus or Comfort Plus or whatever. So I really believe that's why they got slammed on that. The regular seat pitch is fine, especially if you're on a 2 hour or less flight. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment doing that for a 5 hour flight, but it's no different than if you're in the back of an American Delta or United plane either. So,
well, and I agree with you, Max, about how close people need to be. Although when I was coming back from Vegas, there was this really attractive lady sitting next to me and I was hoping that she would, yeah, well, okay, but
it didn't work out.
She didn't touch me either. So,
okay.
But Okay.
All right. So
let's just go on to something else.
Moving very quickly, next story from Jalopnik. A fascinating headline here. Brand new AC-130 Ghost Rider, a total loss after going inverted while out of control. So this was an Air Force Special Operations Command AC-130J Ghost Rider gunship. David, can you explain to us what that thing is?
It's a C-130 with a very large gun sticking out the side of it. Okay. Let me first say I'm pissed off at this article because of the photograph that they used. And to drive home the point that it went inverted, they took a Air Force photograph of a C-130 banking, and they flipped it 180 degrees, so it looks like it's upside down. Shame on Foxtrot Alpha. That's just not cool. But one of the things the C-130 does, or an AC-130, is all of its weaponry is aimed on the left-hand side pointing down. So you fly an AC-130 in a circle counterclockwise around your target and point your weapons that way. So you have a steep angle, and when guns fire, guns recoil. So you have a kick causing the nose of the airplane to go one way or another. And they were simulating this. The C-130J is a new gunship replacing our AC-130Hs, which have been around forever, and to supplement our U-boats, which are the AC-130Us. This is the first ones that are the supplemental with the new engines, the new bladed props, and the new airframe. Well, unfortunately, they were testing it and the pilots lost control and the aircraft went inverted and did serious damage to the airframe to the point that it was a total write-off. And this was just in testing. So this was an airframe with only less than 100 hours on it. So this is a major oops. And it was a lot to do with pilot error and loss of control and not recovering properly in a maneuver that most gunship pilots should know how to do, because it's standard operating procedure for when you're firing a 30-millimeter gun at the ground. So it's kind of unfortunate, but hopefully there'll be lessons learned and they'll figure out a way to afford a new Ghost Rider.
Because this was a test flight, right? I mean, the J's aren't in production yet.
J's, they're in production, but this was a acceptance test the airframe. You know, they were putting it, they're learning the parameters, because the AC-130J is a new aircraft, and it's different than our old U-boats and H's and E's and A's. The J or Super Hercules is different. It is a substantially different aircraft. It's a glass cockpit, different handling, and I think it's more fly-by-wire, so in the process of trying to fly it like a AC-130, they lost control and recovered badly.
Yeah, but you know, the good thing that you can't lose sight of here is, yes, the airplane was a total loss, but it got them all back on the ground in one piece in order for everyone to look at it and say, holy smokes, you guys destroyed this airplane, but it kept flying.
Yeah, C-130s will do that to you. They'll bring you.
Well,
home.
You know, they forgot those famous words. Negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
Yeah, no, I get the impression from other places I've read, they cracked the spar of the wing.
Yeah, because it exceeded the design load limits. So even if there wasn't any structural damage, I think it still would be a write-off, wouldn't it? If you exceed the operating G limits, exceed the design load, by definition, you don't...
You total the airplane. I mean, well, I'll ask the safety expert, but would you get in an airplane that exceeded its maximum limits?
I don't think I would. But, of course, you know, that's an interesting question, though. Do they absolutely trash the airplane if it has ever exceeded its limits? I don't know if that is the point at which they say, no, piece of junk. I don't know if it works that way. I mean, I guess it should, but I don't know that for a fact. And maybe one of our listeners does.
The answer is, I mean, there has to be some sort of damage involved. I know that there are aircraft in combat situations that, for whatever reason, exceed their operating G limits. I have a feeling that there's a little bit more to it than that. And the rumor, and I could be wrong, but the rumor was that they cracked the spar of the wing. And you do that, that's just toast. They'll be able to strip the engines off of it, and it didn't have the weaponry on it, and I'm sure that they'll salvage it, but basically it's going to become a ground trainer somewhere on some base, like my father used to have. We used to have a Hulk that they used to be able to train on. So it'll serve out its life, but it's a brand new airplane. It's a hurt.
Yeah. Well, that was a brand new airplane. Let's talk about old airplanes. The 777. We see in 24/7 Wall Street this article, why a Boeing 777 only costs $10 million. And according to the article, a new 777-200ER has a list price of $277 million. And if you assume a 30% discount, which is not unreasonable, that means it would cost you about $194 million to purchase the -200ER. Now, Delta has said that it was offered used 777s from Boeing for $10 million apiece. Not a bad savings. It's certainly below book value, certainly below appraised value. That certainly has a serious impact on new sales if used aircraft are available for such a discount compared to what it costs for new.
And especially if there's still an awful lot of life in the airframe and you can refurbish the interior, which that's mostly what passengers, I don't necessarily want to say care about, but that's certainly what they see. I don't think most passengers would be able to tell the difference between a brand new plane coming off the assembly line versus one that's been freshly remodeled.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
So saving the, you know, $260 million, not a bad deal.
Well, Lehman News had some thoughts on this. Used 777-200ERs can't be given away, which I guess means that the availability is high relative to the demand. They make some comments about the Rolls-Royce engines on the -200ERs, the Rolls-Royce maintenance programs. They make, according to Lehman News, the traditional engine valuations irrelevant. And a glut of newer 777-300ERs also has an effect on it. Again, it's sort of this bizarre, fascinating theater that is commercial aviation in terms of what drives behaviors. All this really had an impact on Boeing's stock price when it came out. All right. Hey, let's move on to a few other stories. We got some weird things that happened in the news. This is from the Herald and News. The city and TSA spar over screening services. Now, this is a story about the Transportation Security Administration will not be providing screening services at the Greater Lake Klamath Regional Airport in Oregon. The TSA says the airport passenger load, well, it's too variable and infrequent to warrant the expense of setting up screening services. So the alternative system, the solution, is to have passengers from that regional airport go through screening at their destination in Portland. But that would be after the flight. Does anybody else think that's kind of odd?
Well, so does that mean in Portland they're going to have to build little human habit trails to force the people to go through TSA after they land so they could leave the airport again?
I don't know. And what happens if you find someone that's got, you know, unapproved items that they just, you know, wouldn't have been allowed to board a plane if the inspection had been where it normally is, pre-flight? What do you do post-flight?
Like a full bottle of water?
Yeah.
No, I see huge issues with this.
Yeah, something doesn't make sense. I have a feeling that maybe there's a sentence or something that went missing out of that story, because that would completely defeat the entire purpose of everything they've been trying to create over the last 15 years security-wise.
It sure seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, but as long as you're safe getting off the plane, isn't that all that matters?
No, I did when you guys first posted this earlier in the week, I said that that happened to me actually in Dubai. I had never been screened when I got off the airplane before. And I think I came through London, and I just stayed in the secure area, got on the airplane for Dubai. And then when the bags came down, they said, time to check your bags. And I thought they were customs people because that would be kind of what you'd expect. And they said, no, security check. And they ran them through an X-ray machine. And I thought, wow, I had never seen that before. But I don't get. However, the difference is that we were also screened long before we ever got on the airplane. So that's why I don't think this makes any sense.
Yeah, it really does smell like there must be something else here. Hopefully someone can help us understand this. If you know what's going on here, please let us know because we're curious. Another funny story, this from France. Orly Airport, they've been experiencing some flight delays, groundings, due to the air traffic control system breaking down. So the French Air Traffic Controller Union, they said they know what the problem is. They said the problem was that the air traffic software runs on, now get ready for this, folks.
Drum roll, please.
Windows, it's not going to be XP, Windows 3.1. I can barely remember Windows 3.1.
This so much reminds me of a bug that Microsoft had in Windows NT, whereas if you let it run for, I forget how long it was, it was something like 29, 30 days, crash. And the programmers never thought that anyone would maintain have a server up and running for that length of time.
I remember that. It's crazy. This stuff is nuts that you would be running air traffic control on Windows software from the last century.
That's not nuts. It's just stupid.
Well, the only thing that's crazier, I think, is that the French Transportation Ministry, they say that they're going to upgrade the system by 2017.
And they're going to upgrade it to Vista?
No, probably XP.
Which is also currently out of maintenance.
Right. Great. Yes. Uh-huh. Some good news. I think this is good news. Man busted for shining laser pointer at aircraft. I like
Yay.
This. This is a 40-year-old man who should know better. He was arrested in California. Oh, I love this story because not this part. He was shining a green laser at a Southwest Airlines plane. So what happened? The California Highway Patrol sent up a plane to see if they could locate this guy. So what does he do? He flashes the CHP plane. Of course, that announces where he is, and they find him and direct the folks on the ground, the police on the ground, to his location, and he's arrested.
And, yeah, and you know how many drones he wants for Christmas?
Yeah, and for sure, he's going to register each and every one of them, isn't he, Rob?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a story for another show.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Who did that? One other item, this is kind of fun, from Fox News affiliate. Aircraft carrier crew creates Star Wars spoof. David, you must have enjoyed it. It's a short little kind of trailer spoof from our friends on the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Yep, Eisenhower decided, Ike, as they like to be called, decided that they needed to spoof one of the Star Wars Episode 7 trailers that we're getting so much of. And it's very funny, very well done and thought out, and they hit all the marks, and I kind of like the mop bucket going across instead of BB-8, but you have to watch it.
That that was the best part.
It was way too short.
It was. I know. I was hoping it was going to go on and on.
But, yeah.
But it's the length of the TV spot trailer.
Okay.
Literally, shot for shot, it's... Well done, Eisenhower. We like Ike, and it's nice to see that our soldiers, our sailors, Marines, are having a little fun when they're out protecting us also.
Very good. So we'll have that in the show notes. Hey, I see we have a video of the week. Who found this one?
Must have been Trescott, since nobody's answering.
Okay. I guess
not. Also a great video.
Yeah. All right. So this is JetBlue teams up with Rob Gronkowski for most brotastic airline commercial ever. So this is a JetBlue and New England Patriots, I think, link up.
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll put that in the show notes. All right, moving on to other things. David, do we have an airplane of the week?
We do.
What do we have this week?
Well, I sat this afternoon, what to do with this week's history segment. Did you know on the 26th of November, the Tupolev TB-1, the Vickers 143, the Gloster Javelin, and the Piaggio P-166 all had their first flight? And in 2003, the Concorde had its last. But none of those jumped off the page, so I thought it would be clever. I could do the TBF-TBM because it was known by the Navy as the Turkey, the F-6F Hellcat because it created the Marianas Turkey Chute, or I could go modern and do the Su-35 Fullback in honor of that Thanksgiving sport of football. After all that, I decided I was going to go back to my secondary role on the podcast, one of resident sap. So here it goes. For me personally, 2015 is sucked. That being said, I've never been more humbled by the outpouring of support I received from our listenership. I always sign off with, thanks for listening. While I might say it, the whole team here means it. We are thankful and grateful for you taking time out of your lives to spend some time with us. While I've missed more episodes than I've made, I want to thank my co-hosts for putting up with my erratic, if not sporadic, appearances. Sometimes it's nice to know you can be replaced. The show must go on, as they say in theater. So I need to say thank you to Rob, Max T, and Brian for providing me hours of enjoyment laughing my butt off listening to them try and talk about military stuff. Grant, Steve, and Peter for knowing there wasn't going to be a history segment to make sure their segments were even longer to fill in the time. And last, Mr. Flight, who has covered for me for not one but two shows and understood podcasting from bed is neither easy or comfortable, yet he found a way for me to sound okay. It's one thing for him to take out all my ums. It's another thing to ask him to take out all my grunts, groans, and moans from pain. Lastly, to all those people who wrote me back in April and May, those emails meant a great deal to me and were one more reason for me to strive to get healthier. While it's still a bumpy road with challenges, you all give me incentive to push on. So this time of year, we celebrate family here in the States, and I want to say thank you to my Geeks family. You are the best. So happy Thanksgiving from the States. This is David M. Vanderhoof, your Airplane Geeks historian, signing off.
Hmm. All right, David, I think you speak for us all in terms of how thankful we are, really, to just have this amazing community here, this amazing audience, the friends, the listeners, the guests, all the people that we've met and spoken to and worked with. It's just been it's been an amazing journey. I think we're all very thankful for that.
Is it over?
Yeah. Rob, we forgot to tell Rob.
Well, no. I mean, the way you said that, you made it sound like it has been an amazing journey. And no, it's as we close tonight and forever, something like that.
No, not yet. We're not done yet. We might be close, but we're not done yet. All right. Let's take a little break for us and listen to the Australia Desk from Down Under.
The didgeridoo means it's time for the Australia News Desk. Here's two of the craziest guys we could find south of the equator. It's Steve Vischer and Grant McHaren from the Plain Crazy Down Under podcast.
Dateline, 23rd of November, 2015.
Well, g'day, folks, and welcome to the Australia Desk for this week's episode number 378. After yet another week's break, Grant G, we must be busy, or at least we're pretending to be busy.
Well, we certainly do a good impression of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Grant, let's have a look at some people who have been busy this week. The Royal Australian Air Force and, in fact, the Australian Antarctic Division. They've been getting together and doing some real interesting work. They've actually flown a C-17 Globemaster III all the way down to the Wilkins Ice Runway down there in Antarctica. Great stuff.
That's right, mate. The Wilkins Ice Runway. It's a blue ice runway. There was a time a couple of years ago where they actually had to close a runway because they couldn't use it during the summer when it was actually too warm and the consistency of the ice wasn't solid enough to land any of the aircraft on. That's usually used for the Antarctic Division's leasing of an A319, an Airbus from the guys at SkyTraders. We've had them on the show a while back. And they do the run from Hobart, land and come back and don't require any fuel. So there's no impact of refueling services and all that on the ice. And there, this was the biggest aircraft that's gone into the Wilkins Ice Runway up on one of the plateaus. And it was a RAF C-17. Pretty impressive.
Now, of course, the payload of a C-17, we're told, is around about 70 metric tons. They actually restricted that down to about 12 tons in this case, Grant. And I guess this is very much, as they term it, a proof of concept flight. I wonder if they'll end up carrying a bit more cargo in future flights.
Yeah, they can get up to 20 tons of equipment and people, but they, as you could imagine, they need full tanks to be able to get all the way there and all the way back. So that does limit you on what you can carry. But still, 20 tons, even just 12 tons, that's still pretty impressive. And did allow them on this trip to take down an ice crawler. I believe they call them a snow cat. It's a dual cab unit that allows them to go and take people around on the ice. Pretty impressive piece of equipment. And they also practiced a medical emergency. They had some of the RAF medical people on board to do a rehearsal for just in case they had to evacuate a wounded or ill person from the ice.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. And, you know, talk about media flights, Grant, there's one we need to get ourselves on.
Oh, totally. I was actually talking to one of our contacts while I was in Sydney last week about just that concept.
Yes, well, yeah, push that one, mate, push that one. I reckon that'd be fantastic. You know, at certain times of the year, Qantas run quite a number of chartered flights down where they fly down and over the Antarctic on a scenic flight and then fly back. But, you know, to actually get down there on a C-17 or really any aircraft and just to say you've stepped foot on that continent, that'd be pretty awesome, I reckon.
I totally agree with you, mate. And, yeah, we've also on that same edition that we spoke to the SkyTraders pilot about flying the A319 down there, we also had an interview with some of the groups that put on those sightseeing flights, and even a chat with my sister about what it was like to crew one of them. So,
well, that's going back into the archives.
Very long time ago.
Many years ago. Well, somebody else that likes to do a lot of travelling these days is our new Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, Grant, and it seems that, well, he's not really happy with the current executive fleet that flies around the VIPs in the Royal Australian Air Force. And, well, mate, is he looking for a new plane, perhaps an A330 on the shopping list?
Well, I don't know if he's going to go as high as one of those. RAAF runs a small fleet of Challenger 604 business jets, and that can carry up to 9 passengers. So that's convenient for short hops, small entourage, things like that. But the Prime Minister typically travels in one of the BBJs that we also have, Boeing BBJ, painted in RAF colours. I think we've got about 2 or 3 of them. And that works a bit better when he's taking a bit more of his entourage and maybe a couple of people from the press with him. But for the flights that he's been doing lately, he's had to jet around the world quite a bit for a number of these summits. They've had a number of back-to-back APEC summits, G20 summits, and various other events that he's been needed to be at. And he's actually apparently chartered an A330 with a VIP section, as well as lots of seats for press, members of the press and various other people to accompany him. So there is some talk about whether one of the KC-30A tankers that we've got could actually be repurposed with either a modular interior that could swap or just a dedicated VIP area.
Yeah, it's interesting, and of course, it's never popular. It's about as popular as politicians voting themselves pay rises, which they seem to do with monotonous regularity over here, Grant, but buying themselves new jets, I guess, is never going to be a popular move either, but we do need them, and I guess if you put it in context, Grant, when they got the BBJs, they actually replaced some very, very old Boeing 707s, so I guess they don't do it very often, and when you're going around flying the flag for your nation, I guess you've got to do that. I mean, crikey, Grant, even the Kiwis have got a 757. That's a pretty impressive-looking machine.
especially the way they throw it around the sky.
Yeah, they do a great job of that.
Yeah, the Challengers replaced a Falcon trijet. They had a few Falcon trijets, but they were range limited and payload limited. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. Indications are that international travel for heads of state is a lot more common these days and a lot more pressing the flesh required, back-to-back trips. So you do need something with legs, something that's got a bit of range, and the ability to carry quite a bit of an entourage and members of the press and various groups like that. So an A330 would work pretty well. We've got a number of them in the KC-30A role, so wouldn't take too much extra to deck one out for him. But, you know, mate, I don't think he's going to be able to buy a couple of the other aircraft that are up on the market, because an MD-80 probably wouldn't cut it. And a Citation X, that's just a bit small, although it is fast.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, Grant, because rather flamboyant, I suppose, or annoying, depending on your point of view, politician in this country by the name of Clive Palmer is not doing so well these days. Mining magnate, made a lot of money there and has been in politics for the last couple of years. But yeah, Grant, those aircraft you mentioned are owned by companies of his, apparently, and apparently not doing so well. He's trying to get rid of them. Well, yeah. Well, I don't think he's going to find too many buyers for MD-80s these days, but maybe somebody will stump up $7.35 million for a nicely decked-out Cessna Citation.
Well, it is a Citation X, which is quite a fast aircraft. And, yeah, look, not surprising that they're up for sale, mate, because the mining boom is definitely gone. Over the last year or so, we've been talking about the mining boom coming off the boil, that things are starting to settle down. Well, they're actually tipping over, and it's not really just settling down and coming off the peak. They're on the back of the wave now and heading into a trough, and Mr. Mining Magnate Clive Palmer needs to, you know, offload a few assets, and a couple of them are aircraft.
Well, good luck to him there. I tell you what, Grant, if he just drops that price by about more than $7.3 million, well, maybe I could even think about buying it, but not,
oh, there you go, mate.
Not much
there
chance
you go.
Of
you
that,
could
huh?
almost afford to run it for about half an hour, too.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even afford to run a Cessna 172 these days, mate.
Well, there is always that, but
I'm building a house, you know.
Well, speaking of houses and aircraft and things like that, your favourite airline have got a different aircraft, haven't they?
Yeah, it's interesting, Grant. The great friends at a lot of the spotters groups here in Melbourne went wild just yesterday as we record this at the arrival of a new or newish Tiger Air Boeing 737. You may remember several episodes back we were talking about Tiger Airways, who are owned by Virgin Australia these days. Virgin actually is putting a few of their 737s across into the Tiger Airways fleet in an interesting move, where they'll be crewed or flown by Virgin Australia pilots, but crewed in the cabin by Tiger Airways flight attendants. So that's a really interesting thing. Now, I must say, VH Victor Uniform Bravo, Grant, I'm sure we've flown on that aircraft more than a few times ourselves.
I'm pretty sure we have, right?
It does look quite spiffy, I suppose, in the Tiger Air colours. But, of course, Tiger Air operate A320s primarily, so it's a little bit strange to look at. But I tell you what, Grant, I'm still not flying them. I don't care what you say.
Well, they are modifying the 737 interior to a one-class 180-seat layout. So, yeah, reasonably squeezy in there. But, yeah, it's going to be operated by Virgin. It's painted in Tiger colours, and it's going to be doing Adelaide Bali, Melbourne Bali, and Perth Bali. There's going to be three of them, and that will allow them to run those routes. The word is, though, that Virgin might are looking at putting some of their A330s onto the Fiji run and various points like that, I believe also Thailand, because they're getting quite a bit of business there.
Well, they are, Grant. In fact, do you reckon they could do that by this coming Saturday? Because as luck would have it, I'll be flying with Virgin to Fiji on that day.
Yeah, I don't like your chances, mate. The Magic 8 Ball says, nah.
No, what a shame. So we'll be crammed into a 737 for the five-hour flight. I suppose I can put up with that.
Oh, that's a lovely thing. I've been in the 737 for the five-hour flight. It was great. Up front, lots of room, nice recline, lovely service.
Yes, well, you know, my Dutch genetics don't allow me to fly in the expensive area, so we'll be flying economy class, Grant.
Oh, we don't fly that often, so we thought we'd splurge.
What are you talking about, mate? You've been flying more than most Qantas pilots I know lately.
Hey, speaking of which, I took one of our friends up, friend of the show, who happens to be an A380 pilot, took him up for a balloon flight. I was just in Canberra the other day, and off we went. It was great fun.
Oh, there you go. More altitude for you, Grant. Well, that's everything we have for you on this week's Australia Desk. Grant, we might try and maybe, hopefully, the hotel where we're staying, it's got some nice Wi-Fi. Maybe we could do a remote report from Fiji next week.
That could be fun. I mean, you know, we could almost maybe try and do a live one and let Max do the editing.
Hey, don't say that too loud, mate. He won't even let us on air if that happens.
Yeah, well, there is that point.
All right, until next week. Possibly. I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarron.
Cheers, folks.
Oh, dear. Yeah, don't send any editing jobs this direction, that's for sure. So thanks, Steve and Grant. You can find those guys, follow along their adventures and antics at plaincrazydownunder.com. All right, now let's see. Rob, we often have an aviation minute from you at this point in the show. What are we looking at this episode?
Well, it's funny that you use the word looking because the aviation minute is evolving. Oh. I guess I should say it has evolved. For the last few months, actually, we've been negotiating with a number of heads of state of European communities and some of the major South American governments as well. And of course, since they had absolutely no idea what I was trying to talk about, nor did they care, they, of course, hung up on me. But beside that, over the probably the last 6 months, the Aviation Minute has evolved into a video product. And we're working with the folks at aviationpros.com, which publishes Airport Business Magazine, AMT, Ground Support Worldwide Magazine. So they really like the idea of the editorial content on the Aviation Minute, but they wanted to see how it would work as a video product. So, boy, I'll tell you, two videos in 1 week between the NBAA video and this, and wow, I'm just...
You're like a star now.
Yeah, I mean, actually...
All Rob, one, all the time.
Yeah. So it's... I do hope everybody will go up and take a look, and we put the link in the show notes as well, and people can subscribe to that the way they have always done the Aviation Minute, and hopefully all the people that are subscribed there will be transferred over so they can see the video version. And in case you don't like the way I look when I talk,
come back here and listen to this.
Don't look at your phone or your computer. But anyway, so it's a lot of fun actually doing it as a video because it gives you a little more room to be expressive with your face. And I've managed to keep all the rude finger gestures out of the camera. So that's worked out pretty well, but it'll be about the same. We're going to be doing these every couple of weeks on a more regular schedule. So if anybody has ideas about great topics that we should be looking at to editorialize on, knowing I'm as shy as I am, we certainly hope you'll give us a buzz. But I hope everybody likes it, and it's a lot of fun to do. And I think that is all I'm going to say, and they'll just have to go – watch this first one, and then we'll decide what we do from there on the next ones.
Great. That's very exciting, Rob. And, you know, I have to say, one thing I've always noticed about watching you on Fox News, for example, and you mentioned it, is that there's no hiding oftentimes, you know, your opinions and your thoughts on different topics just from your facial expressions. I mean, it's...
I was going to say, you think Rob makes facial expressions when someone says something stupid? No, not our Rob.
Agree with?
Yeah, no. Exactly.
I mean, come on. Someone actually accused me once of playing to the camera, and I said, I honestly wasn't. I'm just not a very good liar.
That's you, right? Exactly. Yeah, very good.
And that's what makes it kind of fun is you get to see the person, you know. But we're going to be talking about topics, not just piloting topics, but aircraft maintenance topics or regulator topics or airport issues. So we're going to kind of cover a lot of different directions there, and hopefully it will be fun.
All right, let's move on and listen to Peter Johnson across the pond.
Hello there, this is Peter Johnson, and following David's segment last week, and the support being shown to France. I thought I'd give a bit of a French feel to the segment today. However, the first story I did just want to clear off was the story last week and the discussion about the Sukhoi Superjet 100 and the lack of international orders. Did just want to correct you there. The first two Sukhoi Superjet 100s actually started operations in Mexico in 2013 with Interjet on local services from Mexico City. So I think they now have about 14 of these on the fleet with another 16 on order. So again, small numbers, but just thought I would add that in. Anyway, on to the main segment. And I can't bring you a picture to the show of the Rafale, but I can bring you some audio. So I'll let you have a little listen to the French display team at Air Day 2015. That was a Rafale and two Super Entendards. And I'll play them a few more times before the end of the segment. Super Entendards departing, and the Rafales are just about to depart now. Next news story I just wanted to pick up on, and I'm sure Rob is well on top of this, is of course Dassault's new flagship, the Falcon 8X, which made its public debut at NBAA last week. They sent over number 6 of the airframers aircraft, and that will be going on to the Arkansas facility to be fitted out and repainted following the show. I think the thing that really stands out to me is the size of this aircraft. I think the difference between what we used to call business aviation and small airliners is a very, very thin line. Very, very attractive aircraft. I'd love to know what Rob thinks about its flying capabilities, but it's well into its certification program and looking forward to seeing those. I think the first 3 aircraft are currently being fitted out for the first customers. Of course, that is a trijet and has a maximum speed of just under Mach 1, I think. So quite an impressive aircraft. We saw the Dassault Rafales in action delivering ordnance over Syria. 6 Rafales and 4 Mirage 2000s were in action, and coordinated with the US, dropped a heavy amount of ordnance over there. So the Rafale is continuing to demonstrate its combat readiness, and of course is picking those orders up, as David mentioned in the last week's show. And following the recent statement of John Leahy from Airbus, who predicted that the A380neo would be in service by 2022-2023, Airbus chief executive Fabrice Brégier has said that 7 years is too early. He thinks an enhanced version of the A380 will enter the market eventually, but not as quickly as Leahy had predicted. He said the 2022 date was mentioned is too early. Now, of course, at the moment, most of the pressure on Airbus is coming from Emirates, and Tim Clark, their chief exec, of course, had called on Airbus to produce the A380neo and was looking for it to be as competitive as the A350-1000 or the 777-9. Now, Airbus still seems unconvinced by the A380neo and is still looking to justify its development. In terms of Airbus and its current A380 backlog, it's around 140 aircraft at the moment in the backlog, so it is running down pretty quickly, and of course about half of those aircraft are currently assigned to Emirates Airlines, and thank you to Flight Global for those details. Over to airline news, and Air France KLM reported a better than expected improvement in third quarter earnings. Sadly, although the net loss for €158 million for the first 9 months compared to a loss of €500 million in the comparative period last year, it's really not enough to get this airline back on its feet. And Chairman Alexandre de Juniac is saying that it will take them probably another 2 years to get back and to become competitive. Sadly, some of that cost cutting we've seen in the news with the cuts in manpower for Air France KLM and the very sad pictures of the HR director being having his shirt ripped from him. So not all's well at Air France KLM, but we're hoping to see that airline now turn the corner. So this is Peter Johnson reporting for the Airplane Geeks from across the pond.
Wow, thanks, Peter. Great report. Of course, maybe that's because he's got all those jet engine sounds in there, which kind of get my juices flowing.
Hey, Max, that one picture that he supplied, or the first picture, I should say, do you think that's a double exposure, or was he actually able to capture those two jets in flight like that? Because that's a pretty cool picture.
The answer was he got both of them at one shot because they were up. They launched two at the same time, and they were doing the pattern together.
Ah, very good. All right, yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. Peter sent along a couple of photos, a couple of images that I think he took. Didn't he take these, David?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's what the copyrights to XTP Media.
XTP Media, so. which of course is Peter. Well, you know, Peter talked about the Sukhoi Superjet 100, and he wasn't the only one to kind of catch us and provide some more information. We heard from our listener, Neil, who wrote us from Down Under, as it turns out, also noting that Mexico's Interjet had ordered 17 of this type in 2011, has been operating them since 2013. And he says that on a recent trip to Dallas, he said, "I was surprised and excited to see my first of this type operating at the airport." We can put a link in the show notes to the fleet information, orders, deliveries, and operators from Wikipedia. So in other listener feedback, we got quite a lot from you all after our Flight Sim episode last week, Airplane Geeks episode 377. Gene wrote us and said, great episode. However, you failed to mention the newest and most prominent simulator out there at this moment, DCS World. He says it started as a simulator for United States Air Force A-10C pilots, making a transition from the A model to the C model of the Warthog. He says it's as detailed as a simulator can be at this moment and probably the best in the looks department also. And he sent us a couple of videos concerning DCS, and so we'll put those in the show notes. We also heard from Little G on Flight Sim, and he said another great resource to add to the realism of flight simulation is something called virtual airlines. And yeah, we didn't really get into them that much. According to the VATSIM website, he says a VA is a virtual airline is a member-driven group which aims to simulate the flights and operations of an airline, charter operation, or flying club. Some may be based on real-world companies, while others are fictional. The route structure of virtual airlines may be regional, national, continental, or global. Fascinating. Virtual airlines, that's a whole branch of this sort of a hobby that's quite fascinating. And I know that there's a lot of really passionate devotees of virtual airlines out there. Little G mentions that he flies for a fictional airline called Star One Alliance, he says, which is basically a giant amount of real-world airlines under one website. I also fly for Fly American Airlines, mocking the real-world American Airlines and all the one-world airlines, he says. Virtual United, which mocks the real-world United Airlines and all the Star Alliance airlines. WN Virtual, which mocks the real-world Southwest Airlines, WestJet, something called FS Economy, which he says allows pilots to earn in-game virtual money by flying general aviation aircraft to and from nearly every airport on Earth. With those virtual earnings, pilots can purchase their own airplanes, join or start virtual businesses with other members, operate FBOs, and more. So, wow, this is even more extensive and developed than I was aware of. So, lots of interesting stuff to do out there in the virtual simulation world.
Wouldn't it be great if you could actually earn that virtual money and be able to use it for real flight lessons?
Yeah, Bitcoin or something like that.
Yeah.
We also heard from David. He wrote to us and said, thank you for touching on the flight sim topic. Two follow-up questions. He said, number one, the multi-monitor question was asked, but I don't recall hearing an answer on the show. He says, I've played a lot of flight sim over the years and have also been able to take some flying lessons and have soloed. All of my flight training is VFR, so I'm looking out the window for visual references. Using a single monitor flight sim, I was never happy with my turns in the traffic pattern, especially trying to roll out of a turn onto final and be lined up with the runway center line. However, this all changed as soon as I used multiple monitors, which allowed me to physically look left while flying a simulated left base leg. At the height of my flight sim play, I had five old PCs with MS Flight Simulator coordinated over the network using an old program called WideView. This setup let me position five monitors in a half circle, and my flight maneuvers in flight simulation got a lot more precise. Any multi-monitor comments that you can share from Nicholas or other show hosts? So
I just wonder if they were the old CRT monitors. If so, he was getting a lot of radiation.
Yeah, getting soaked by it. I don't know. That sort of sounds like my podcasting studio, actually. Right now, of course, I'm remote, but normally in the studio, I've got lots of monitors and PCs and all kinds of stuff like that. I've got most of the setup I need to do some serious flight simming. And then Ryan wrote in, said, enjoyed the episode about flight sim. Highly recommend checking out pilotedge.net for serious professional ATC for simulators. He said Pilot Edge keeps regular hours and service areas, and controllers are paid and trained to a high standard. Unlike the networks mentioned in the show, it has a monthly or yearly subscription fee, but you absolutely get what you pay for. It also is used by commercial facilities like flight schools and university aviation programs. Ryan says
we had those guys on the show. Oh gosh, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it seems like a long, long time ago, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan says, finally, he'd recommend X-Plane 10 as a better platform for serious training than either FSX or P3D at this point. Thanks to all that wrote in about the flight sim conversation we had. I know we learned a lot. I know that some of our listeners know a lot more than we do. And that's part of this whole purpose here is to, collectively learn about aviation, and whether it's real, simulated, or, Rob, even drones.
But at least you don't drone on.
Sometimes I do.
Oh.
But I'm going to take a break shortly. But first, another email that came in from Mike, Maynard Mike. He sent in a video titled Emirates Hello Jetman. And the description is, armed with unguarded ambition and the vision to push boundaries beyond the unthinkable, Jetman Dubai and Emirates A380 take to the skies of Dubai for an exceptional formation flight. This is a jet suit and an Emirates A380 flying in formation, which is, I don't know. Rob, have you looked at this video?
The only thing that I thought about it, beside the fact that he looked a little close to me, was that I wondered, he must have been smart enough to stay out of the vortices from the wings, because otherwise he would have been ripped to shreds, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my thought. The other was from the engines. I mean, you could become FOD pretty quickly flying around an A380 in flight. My goodness.
But I don't know if those engines were ever tested sucking in a man in a stupid flying suit.
Probably not.
When they shot chickens into them, but I don't know about the other part.
Oh, dear. We heard.
I'm sorry, Max. There was a video on how they made the video that I think was really fascinating as well.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was probably better than the first video itself. Yeah, the behind-the-scenes video was great.
We heard again from Lil G. This is an article, Is China a Real Threat to Boeing and Airbus? And this comes about because of the rollout of the first COMAC C919 jetliner in China. And it's got some interesting quotes in here, first from Qatar Airways Chief Executive Akbar El Baker, who said that we would have, quote, no hesitation at all in buying Chinese airplanes as long as they were made to the standard that he wanted. And he also said that there is nothing wrong with buying Chinese. You use an iPhone, which is made in China, designed by somebody else, but made in China. He says, I think it would be good for this, being Boeing and Airbus, a monopoly to be broken. And that was him at the Dubai Air Show.
That's what the Bombardier people have been saying for 10 years. And the C-Series is still not doing very well.
Yeah, that's such a bad analogy. If my iPhone breaks, I really don't care. I'll throw it away and get a new one. If the airplane that I'm flying in breaks, I don't know if I have that second chance.
I think that, the degree to which he might actually believe the words that he said, is debatable.
Yeah.
But what I think is clear and consistent with his track record is sort of mixing it up and hoping to push Boeing and Airbus in ways that increases competition. And if he can use the Chinese example to leverage that point, I think he would. We also see from Emirates President Tim Clark. He said, never say never when it comes to China, as it has, quote, the human resource, the physical resource, and the wealth to do it. But he also said that barriers for entry in the airline business are really high. So there's another quote from Strategic Aero Research Chief Analyst Saj Ahmad, who told CNBC, quote, the C919 is a stepping stone for Chinese aerospace experience and knowledge. But right now, it has zero impact on Airbus or Boeing and isn't a viable competitor. He says by the time they get the industrial know-how, they being the Chinese, which could be 50 years, he says, Airbus and Boeing will long since have moved the game on. So there's that perspective as well.
Well, but too, I think one part that we're not talking about is that the Chinese may indeed build an airplane that will do what they say it will do. But what they don't have is they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the service and support network that either Boeing or Airbus or Bombardier or Embraer already have had in place for decades. And that's no small task.
Sure. That's a really good point. I mean, as an operator, it's not just what are the capabilities of the airplane and how much does it cost to procure it, but it's, yeah, that infrastructure to maintain it and support it so that you can keep it flying.
Yeah, what do you do when it breaks?
Exactly.
I don't know. That's it. Oh, Brian had it. You just throw it away and get another one.
Disposable aircraft.
Yeah.
No. We also heard from Ross. He says he's a longtime listener from Manchester in the UK. And he sent along a link to, he says, an interesting radio documentary about ferry pilots. This is from the BBC. It's an audio program. It's from BBC Radio, a 28-minute program called The Last Adventure in Aviation. And it's kind of, they describe it, an insight into the world of ferry pilots in Britain. It's kind of an interesting listen. Thanks to Ross for sending that along. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. And we also heard from our good friend Srinand, and he sent along, you know, we all read this, we read all the emails, but we read this email, we thought, this is a really, really great email. And because I'm tired of talking and getting kind of dry, Rob, do you want to read Srinand's email for us?
Sure, and I think we should give the listeners a little context in case they don't remember Srinand, who was on the first show, what, maybe 5 years, 4 years ago? Hmm. I don't know, something like that. But in fact, then that summer, he and I met in person at AirVenture. Actually, I met him at Milwaukee Airport and picked him up and gave him a ride up to that AirVenture, which I think was AirVenture 2011 maybe or something like that. But so we've kind of stayed in touch. And for those of you that don't know, Srinand was a zero-time pilot when he signed on as a cadet with Singapore. And they taught him how to fly and got all kinds of cool stuff. And he's in the right seat of a 787.
Amazing, huh?
I mean, just amazing.
How cool is that? Yeah.
So anyway, so that's the context. And he managed to send us this letter, which was kind of long. But then now that he's really an airline pilot, he has lots of free time on his hands. So he had plenty of time to write this letter. So while I cannot even remotely sound like him, I'm just going to read his words. Dear Airplane Geeks, you guys are having a great run lately with some great guests on the show. I thought you'd outdone yourself when you had Brian Scholl on the show, but you proved me wrong with Dick Van Grunsven. Oh, way to go, guys. So just coming out of a binge from the last few shows, and yes, Rob, I don't get out much, there's something I really need to get off my chest. I would have sent you an audio clip myself, but I only have a face for radio, not a voice. This refers to the letter sent to you by the 17-year-old man, Nicholas, from France about becoming a pilot. You featured it in episode 373. Now, of course, I'm a 787 driver, so my opinions might be biased, but still, I would like to put this out, and not just to Nicholas, but to all, but to any other youngster who writes about becoming an aviator. I see that most of these letters generally talk about how they always had a dream of pursuing flying as a career. Well, that's step number one. But not too many people have these dreams. Not too many people have any dream at all. I come across so many people who wouldn't know what they would do with the rest of their lives, even if they had all the money in the world. So to me, this is already a victory. And now, in fact, it's an interesting point he made. That's kind of what caught me when I read it. This is Rob speaking, not Srinand. But I thought that was actually interesting because I have met people who you ask them what they're even interested in, they go, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, then it's probably not too strange that you really don't know what to do with your life. So, all right, back to the letter. No more editorializing. We did that before on the mark. So now let's see the argument about if you get enough time. Well, as a pilot, you can only work 1,000 hours a year. That's the reg. Spread that over the course of a normal 8-hour day, 5-day a week, and you will realize it's only 7 months of work. Fewer jobs have so much free time off. Sure, there might be the occasional holidays that you have to be working, but when even work seems like fun, there aren't any complaints. Besides, think of the rest of the time that you can get paid for your family, that you have for your family or your hobbies. Most pilots I know have another financial interest on the side. Of course, this changes depending on if you are a long-haul pilot or a short-haul pilot, but either way, there's plenty of free time. See, I knew he was going to get to that part. Oh, and as for happiness, well, I've met people who are unhappy flying an A380 for a living, and then there are the other people who are happy instructing in a Piper Cub. I'm talking to you, Damien, at Andover Flight Academy, he says. This truly makes me believe that happiness is an inside job. As for whether you would like flying, well, I guess there's only one way to find out. As a bottom line, what I would like to say is this. If you've wanted something for so long, there's very slim chance of you not liking it, which is, of course, why I'm inclined to believe that there will be no regrets if you take flying up. However, it also makes me believe that there will be regrets if you don't try it, and that's never a good place to be. Oh, way to go. I agree. And please don't let news stories about piloting jobs influence your thinking. Aviation has a habit of making it to the papers mostly when it's negative. The industry is cyclic. The industry is cyclical, just like all others, but there's always room for people with passion. And I'm not saying that being a pilot is the only good job in aviation, but it's certainly the coolest. And also, since you're in France, which is really the country for aviation in Europe, I think there are so many opportunities for you as a pilot. You don't have to restrict yourself to the busing operations like I have to in this part of the world, Asia. And finally, I want to start a campaign to get Max Flight as a guest on the show. I absolutely love it. How every time there's an engine mentioned on the show, he gets all excited. Let me hear you get really excited about an engine. PW160, Max.
Yeah, there we go. Yay. Yeah.
They're right. He does. All right. I'm sure he has a lot to share about his days at Pratt & Whitney, but being the host, I guess he also has to keep things moving. Anyway, I'd love to hear more about his days at Pratt & Whitney, and I'm sure other listeners would as well. So thanks for all the wonderful episodes, you guys, and keep them coming. I've been listening to you since episode 50, and you've only gotten better. Cheers, Shrinand, and in parentheses I put 787 first officer.
Fantastic, yeah.
What are cheers? Big deal. Big deal. He's in a 787. Blah, blah, blah. You lucky dog.
Hey, and with all that free time, I could get him episode 1 through 49. So he just has to send me an email, and I'm quite happy to get him the episodes.
That's true, and I bet the people on the airline would love to have that broadcast through the PA, don't you think?
part of the in-flight entertainment.
Yeah, Mary Kirby could help us figure out how to get that into the in-flight entertainment system.
Yeah, we've actually come close once or twice on that. But it's a great email. It's a great message. You know, I love, and I'm not just talking about the last paragraph. I love the message that he gives. I think it's applicable to all of us, a lot of people who are interested in aviation careers and flying and really have a passion for it. It's a great message.
Remember when being a geek was considered a derogatory term?
Sure.
I think that was 2 weeks ago. But now.
Now geeks rule. All right. Two last things really quick. First one of the two, maybe from Patrick, because it kind of came up here in this last one. Is he sent us a link to a video. It's called I Sit Around, and it's an airline pilot parody talking about sitting around, having free time, done to the Beach Boys song that if you're as old as Rob and I, that maybe you're familiar with.
Okay, well,
it was hysterical.
I thought it was too, especially the way the they managed to get the harmonies in, like the Beach Boys.
Right,
that was pretty cool. So,
we'll have that
if
in the show.
If you don't know who the Beach Boys are, well, tough.
Google it.
Yeah, Google it. There you go.
One last thing, Jamie Dotson sent us a photograph of a Lionheart biplane over Tennessee. Sent by or photographed by Chris Davis from Moontown, and we'll put this photo in the show notes because I think it's really kind of a spectacular photo of a really beautiful airplane. And we love spectacular photos, and we love beautiful airplanes. So if you have an image of either of those, feel free to send those along to us, and yeah, you might find it in the show notes for an episode. All right. Well, I think we'll bring this one to a close. We want to thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. We'll return next week to our usual format, I believe, with a guest that time. But we wanted to get to some of the more of the listener email that we've been receiving, and I'm glad we had that opportunity to do that. So let's tell folks where they can find each of us or contact us. Brian Coleman, we'll start with you.
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is brian@airplanegeeks.com. And Max, just real quick, I wanted to take a moment because this is our Thanksgiving show. And last week you kind of hinted that we should think about the things that we are thankful for. And I definitely want to put the show at the top of the list and really acknowledge each of my co-hosts. So Max T, definitely the best flight instructor I've ever flown with. Certainly makes me sad that I moved from Silicon Valley, because I'm certain if I was still living up there, I'd be taking lessons from him and probably be a pilot by now. He's just fantastic at being an instructor. David, you definitely are the most knowledgeable aviation historian I've ever met. Anytime I pose a question to you, anytime any of us pose a question to you, you come up with the answer, and by gosh, it's the right answer. Which is really amazing, just to have so much knowledge just in that head of yours. It's really great working with you. Rob, what could I say about you? You are definitely a joy to work with and so incredibly passionate about flying and aviation and the promotion of it as an industry. Again, I'm really fortunate to have met you. And this, of course, leaves Max. Max, if it wasn't for you and Courtney, none of us would be here. You're such a great host. The interviewing style that you have, the questions that you ask, just absolutely fantastic. I'm so phenomenally thankful and grateful that you asked me to join this cast of characters. And like I said before, I'm very thankful for Courtney, because I guess without him sending the original email to you, none of this would have gotten off the ground, and we certainly wouldn't be here. And last but not least, I'm so thankful for our guests, our contributors, Peter, Steve, and Grant. Without them, we certainly wouldn't have the content to talk about. They add so much value to the show. We get to make fun of them every once in a while, and it's all great fun. And then certainly last but not least, it's our listeners, because without our listeners, there wouldn't be anything here for us to do. So with that, I'm so incredibly thankful and grateful for all of you guys.
Wow. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, I think you've kind of summed it up well, represent what all of us, I think, are thankful for. But
Whoa, wait, just one second.
Uh-oh.
Do you mean to tell me that there are people, they're listening to us?
Well, they at least download it. I can't prove that they're listening.
Wow.
No, they must be listening. They send in feedback. They have to be listening.
That's true. Yeah, nicely said. I think you said more than I could certainly have hoped, and as gabby as I am, I think you did a really nice job.
So, David, how can folks find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, or you can at DM Vanderhoof. You can find me on that show on Fridays called the UAV Digest with Max Flight.
And Rob Mark, tell folks where they can find you, including the new place to find you.
Well, let's see. There's a couple of different places. Certainly still Jetwine on Twitter and Facebook and, of course, at jetwine.com. They'll also find me occasionally there on the Opinion Leaders blog at AOPA.org. And certainly the new home for On the Mark, or as we used to call the Aviation Minute, aviationpros.com. And so I hope I'll see some of – well, actually, I can't say I hope I'll see you there because I guess I can't really see you when I look in the camera.
You hope we'll see you there.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Well, that's what I meant, I guess. But so I'm all over the place, hopefully in good places. But and I wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving out there.
Very good. And I'm Max Flight. You can find me on Twitter at Max Flight. Also, I'm on LinkedIn, as David mentioned, at theuavdigest.com and also at the PaxXpodcast.com with Mary Kirby. And I'll add one thing that I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for Brian. For those of you who may not remember or who are new to the show, Brian was just a listener, Pasadena Brian, and he wrote us one day and said, you know, I'd like to do something to help you guys. What can I do to help you guys? And so Brian does a lot of work to schedule guests, to get them prepped in terms of, you know, learning what Skype is, how to get it set up, how to try to get the best audio quality we can from our guests. And it's really had an impact, I think, on the quality of the guests and on the audio quality of the guests as well. So I'm very thankful for Brian helping us out.
We did disregard his first idea, which was to disconnect all the microphones. But,
and I just love it. Every time you say that, you know, I work so hard to get the audio so good, it ends up being a crap audio show.
I know. It's not perfect always, but you
it happens.
Well, you can find us, of course, at airplanegeeks.com. Show notes for this episode at airplanegeeks.com/378. You can find us on Twitter as Airplane Geeks. Also find us on Facebook, Google+, and we're on Stitcher.com and TuneIn Radio. If you want to send us an email, send it to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Opening and closing music is by Brother Love. Find him at brotherloverocks.com. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Fly safely.
Happy Thanksgiving. And in case you don't know what Thanksgiving is, Google pilgrims.
Thanks for listening.
Google pilgrims. I love it.